Magid, who was a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, that he very often used to say over powerful mishalim, powerful parables to try to get his messages across. So they asked the Dubna Magid, why do you always give a mashal in order to say your point? Why don't you just give the point over? So the Dubna Magid obviously answered with a mashal, and he said the following. He said there was a young child who was very sick, and the parents didn't know what to do with him. They brought him to all the specialists in the world, in the community, and finally the doctors came up with the right kind of medication that the child has to take. Problem was, the child refused, absolutely doesn't want to take this, he doesn't want it going into his mouth, it didn't taste good, whatever it might be, and he's sealing his lips and he's standing there very stubborn that there's no way they're going to get the medication into his mouth. So the father realizes this is the only way his son is going to live. What can he do? He got to force it into the mouth somehow. So he hires a comedian to come say jokes in front of his son and do tricks and make his son laugh, and while the son was laughing and his mouth was open, he squirts in the medication, and that's the way he gets it down. Said the Dubna Magid, that's my idea as well. Very hard to give powerful messages over to people just to say it the way it is. To give them the medication sometimes hurts. So the way you do it is you bring in the comedian, you try to bring in the person to make people smile, to make people laugh, to get them to lighten up their hearts a little bit, and then once the mouth is open, I can shoot in some very important messages. So along that train of thought, there's an incredible mashal given by the Dubna Magid, which in fact the Kotzker Rebbe is quoted in many Svarim as saying, this is one of the three mishalim that the Dubna Magid said that he believed had to be Beruach HaKodesh. This was absolutely the right shot in the Pasuk. And the Kotzker Rebbe said about this mashal in particular that this was given to the Dubna Magid Beruach HaKodesh. What that means, I don't know, but that's what he claimed. So what was the mashal? It's on a Pasuk in this week's Haftorah. As we know, we're now less than two weeks away from Pesach. And it's a season, it's a time of year that for many people is considered to be a stressful time of year, and we have so much to cook and so much to clean and so much to buy and so much to do and all the kids, and what are we going to do about it? How are we going to get the matzahs, and when are we going to do the mechiras chametz? And everyone's rushing and busy, and by the time it comes to the Leil HaSeder, how many of us are actually ready to enjoy ourselves? How many of us are actually ready to appreciate what it is that Leil HaSeder is supposed to be for all of us? So the Dubna Magid gives an incredible mashal. He says, there was once a socher echad, there was a wealthy merchant, who got noticed that he had a package by the Namel, by the port that was in the local town. So he asked his assistant, he asked his worker to go to the port and to pick up that package that was waiting for the office. So the worker goes and it's him hours and hours and hours, and he comes back and he's all perspired and he looks so worn out and drained, he's exhausted. And he goes and he's schlepping the package. He walks up to the owner of the company and he says, here, I finally got the package that you wanted me to get from the port, here it is. And the owner looks at him infuriated. He's so upset. He says, this is not what I was looking for. You didn't bring me the right package. He says, how do you know it's not? You didn't even open it up yet. You didn't even check what's inside. How could it be that you're telling me it's not the right one? He says, I ordered feathers. And if you brought a box and you're so perspired and you're so worn out and you're so exhausted and you're so drained from doing the job of carrying the package all the way from the port, it means you obviously got the wrong one. You didn't do the right job because you obviously bought a box of rocks. And I had ordered just a box of feathers. It shouldn't have been that difficult. Said the Dubna Magid, in his opinion, this is the outlook we're supposed to have whenever we come across mitzvahs that look to us as being difficult. The Dubna Magid wrote that in his Lashon, he said, mitzvahs are supposed to be ne'ima u'mituka. He said, mitzvahs are supposed to be enjoyable. They're supposed to be delightful. They're supposed to be gratifying for us. It's supposed to be a pleasurable experience when we have the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. And not only that, he says, the Pasuk tells us that a person who performs a mitzvah, b'kovei Hashem yachalifu koach, a person who gets involved in a mitzvah has more energy, has more vitality, more vigor, more strength to be involved in more mitzvahs, to do more ma'aseh chesed, to do more ma'asim tovim, and therefore he writes, if a person is going to have a perspective, if a person is going to feel stress and anxiety and tension and agony over the mitzvahs that they're supposed to be performing and so much discomfort and so much pressure, it means you're obviously not doing the right thing. It means you got the wrong package. It means it's not really the mitzvah that you're supposed to be doing. And said the Dubna Magid, this is what it means in the Haftarah for Parshas Vayikra. In our Haftarah, the Pasuk says in the Sefer Yeshayahu, V'lo'osi karasa Yaakov, ki agato bi Yisrael. V'lo'osi karasa Yaakov, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you're obviously not looking for me, Klal Yisrael. Ki agato bi Yisrael, if you're so worn out, if you're so stressed out, it means you're obviously not doing the right job. You're going in the wrong direction. It means you're doing the mitzvah in the wrong way, because that's not what mitzvah opportunities are supposed to do for us. That's not the feeling we're supposed to have. And if that's the feeling we have, it means there's something very wrong at the very core of the mitzvah that we're performing. In Parshas Re'eh, the Psukim tell us about the description of all the different trumas and maisras that have to be given. So there the Psukim say you have to give Truma Gedola to the Kohen, and then you have to give Maisa to the Levi, and then you have to give Trumas Maisa back to the Kohen, and all the cycle that has to be done with the produce that comes in. So the Pasuk says that in year 1, 2, 4, and 5, you have to give Maaser Sheni. What is Maaser Sheni? You have to take a certain percentage of the produce, bring it up to Yerushalayim, and eat it in Yerushalayim. But here the Torah says there are two ways of doing that. Either you can take the produce as is and bring it to Yerushalayim, option 1, or option 2, says the Torah, if you have too much crop, too much produce, and you're not able to bring it all to Yerushalayim, it's going to be very difficult to travel with all that, then you can be poded, you can exchange it onto money, bring the money to Yerushalayim, and then once you get there, you're going to exchange it onto food there and eat the food in Yerushalayim. That's what the Torah says. So how does the Pasuk word this second option? The Pasuk says as follows, V'chiyar b'mimcha ha-derech. What if the derech is too cumbersome, it's too much to travel all the way from wherever I live? Ki lo suchal se'eso. I'm not going to be able to carry all of this crop that came in the produce from this year. Ki yirchak mimcha ha-makam asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha, because the place, the makam, which is the makam asher el hashchina, the Beis HaMikdash, is too far. So then the Torah says you should go ahead and exchange it onto the money and bring the money to Yerushalayim. Ask the Yalshech HaKadosh in his commentary on Chumash a very simple question. We know that every word in the Torah is carefully measured, is there for a very specific reason and a purpose. But here the Torah seems to say the same phrase twice. Number one, the Torah says, if it's going to be too far away from you, Ki yar b'mimcha haderech, and then it says, Ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, because the Beis HaMikdash is too far. That's the same thing. The derech is going to be too cumbersome, too long, because the makom is not near you. So that's the same phrase. Ask the Yalshech, why does the Torah have to repeat the phrase twice? That's number one. Number two, ask the Yalshech very simply, what does it mean, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom? Because the Beis HaMikdash became too far away from you. The Beis HaMikdash didn't move. The Beis HaMikdash stayed where it was. You were where you were, and the Beis HaMikdash stayed where it was. You may have moved. So he says, the Pasuk should have said, ki ata terchak me'amakom, because you have moved away from the Beis HaMikdash's place. But the Beis HaMikdash never moved away. It was where it was. Nothing ever changed about the status of Yerushalayim, about the status of the Beis HaMikdash. So what does it mean, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, when the makom starts moving away from you? It didn't move away from you. It was where it was, and it remained where it was from the outset. So what does the Pasuk mean, number one, in the repetition of, number one, ki yar b'mimcha derech and ki yirchak mimcha hamakom? And number two, he says it's the wrong phrase to use. The makom didn't move at all. It stayed where it was. Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash are where they always were. You happen to have moved away, further away. So it should say where you, the individual, has now found yourself in a place which is no longer close or connected to the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Yalshech, that's not what it means. The Yalshech writes, he interprets as follows. When a person lives in a place, ki yirchak mimcha haderech, when you look at the road that you have to travel to Yerushalayim and you say, this is way too far. Ki lo suchal se'eso, I can't handle this. What does God want from me? How much should I travel to Yerushalayim, schlep all of my produce, I'm going to bring everything there, take off weeks and weeks from work to get everything to Yerushalayim. This is ki yar b'mimcha haderech, this is way too difficult. This is not something that I'm able to handle. Says the Yalshech, you know what the answer is? If that's your perspective, it means ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. It means that the perspective of what Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash and God, the Mekomo Shel Olam, where are they in your life? Is that a priority? If it was a priority in your life, then you would say, this is not too far, it's not too difficult, I'm happy to do it. You would travel that far for a simcha, for a chasana, you would do whatever it takes to do something exciting in your life. From the fact that you find it so difficult, ki lo suchal se'eso, I can't handle this, the burden is too much, it's too far of a distance, it's something I cannot do, that means, ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, it means the Beis HaMikdash has moved further and further away from your perspective, from the purview of what you consider to be important in life, from what you give precedence to, from what you think is of the most primary nature in your mind. And therefore, says the Yalshech, mitzvahs are meant to be enjoyable. They're supposed to be exhilarating, refreshing to us. And because we're supposed to feel that rejuvenating feeling every time we perform a mitzvah, it means if a person doesn't have those kinds of feelings, it means that the person obviously has ki yirchak mimcha hamakom. There's something that you're not going in the right direction. It means you're not having the proper perspective of where God is supposed to fit into the basic picture of a person's own life. So that is very similar, I believe, to the comment of the Dubna Maggid, but also a very powerful insight that that's not what mitzvahs are supposed to be. Mitzvahs are supposed to be enjoyable, are supposed to be easy, are supposed to be excitable for us, rejuvenating, and if we don't feel that, it means we have to check again what it is that we feel. Where is our perspective with regard to our Avodas Hashem, with regard to our mitzvahs? There's a story told about Napoleon. So Napoleon lived around 200-something years ago, so they say the story that Napoleon was a fearless, courageous, daring warrior, And he would do anything to conquer any community, any town. So they say that one time Napoleon came with his army to a certain community and he decided it was time to conquer that village, that town. But he gets there and he sees there's a big wall in the way. They had a wall that protected them, and he says he doesn't know how he's going to break through the wall. So he sets up his soldiers, he sets up a siege all around the city, and he decides that we're going to wait here until they give up, until they surrender, and then we're going to be able to conquer it. So he's waiting, 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 weeks and months, and he sees nothing's happening. Finally, he realizes we got to do something. So he decides he's going to dress up as a peasant, he's going to dress up as a poor person, he's going to change his clothing, get his face all dirty, he's going to sneak into the city underground, and he's going to go to the local pub, to the local bar, and he's going to spend time with all the soldiers that need a break at night. He's going to go spend some time with them, get a little high, a little tipsy, and he's going to hear all the secrets that the soldiers share while they're not 100% with their minds about them. So he goes in and he starts hearing all the secrets, and he hears finally that the soldiers are getting worn out and that they're almost ready to give up. In another couple of days, a couple of weeks, they're going to be ready to give up. They've had enough. They're not able to fight any longer. So Napoleon is all excited. He jumps out of the bar. He starts running out to go back and tell all of his soldiers, just another few days, hang on there. We're going to do this. We're going to be able to conquer it. But on his way out, one of the soldiers notices, hey, that looks like Napoleon. That must be him. Then they have a double take. How could it be him? How could he be here? Why would he risk his life to come spend time with us? They start chasing after him. They're not sure. Is it him? Is it not him? And he runs into a clothes store, into these sandler there, a shoe store, a shoemaker, I guess. And he runs in there and he pleads for his life. He says, please, can you hide me somewhere? The soldiers are looking for me. They're going to kill me. They're going to take my life away. Do something to save me. And I promise you, I'll pay you back when we're done with this. When I conquer the city, don't worry about it. He says, sure, no problem. Look, in the back of my store, I have 8 mattresses all lined up, one on top of the other. He picks all them up. He says, you hide underneath all them. Don't worry about it. Nothing's going to happen. 2 minutes later, all the soldiers come running into the store. They say, where's Napoleon? He must be somewhere around here. And they start picking up mattress after mattress to check. Is he hiding under there? Pick up one, pick up two, and three, or four. They get to the seventh. They see nobody hiding there. They leave the last one on the floor. They don't even check underneath it. So Napoleon gets saved by the skin of his teeth. And the soldiers keep moving. And finally, the sandler says, oh, everything's safe now. And he goes and he picks up the last mattress. And he sees Napoleon is white like a ghost. And he sees that he's so nervous. And his hair is turning white. And he's almost fainted. And he gives him a cup of water and he tries to revive him and he says, calm down, everything's fine, I'm going to sneak you back out of the city, everything's going to be okay. And that's what happens. He gets Napoleon back to himself, sends him out of the city, everything's fine. And Napoleon says to him, don't worry about it, I'm going to pay you back when I come and conquer the city. I'm going to pay you back, but kifle kiflaim, I'm going to give you anything you want, don't worry about it, you have nothing to be concerned about. Napoleon gets out, his soldiers come and conquer the city another few days later, and the first thing he tells them is, don't forget, this person, this shoemaker over here, deserves all that he wants, because after all, he's the one that saved my life. If not for him, I would have died inside the city when I went on that secret mission. So they come and they tell this shoemaker, you have every right to come to the palace now, and you have an audience with Napoleon, you can ask him for anything you want. So that's what he does, but he's not such a chacham. So he comes to the palace, and he doesn't have such hasagas in life. So he comes to him, and Napoleon says, what can I give you? What do you want in your life? And he says to him, look, I don't want anything. I'm so honored by the fact that I'm here together with you. I just have one question that I'd like to discuss with you. He says, yes. He says, I'm just curious. When you heard the soldiers come into my shop, and you saw that they were picking up one mattress after the other, and they were looking for you, and they were almost found you, what did it feel like when you were underneath there? So Napoleon turns to him, he says, you fool, this is what you're discussing with me? You're reminding me about those days? What are you, crazy? And he starts yelling at his executioner, whatever it may have been. He says, bring him to the galleys, we're going to hang this guy. What's wrong with him? What a chutzpah. He comes in, this is what he wants to talk about. I'm willing to give him everything in the world. This is what he wants. This is what he wants to discuss with me. So the man is beside himself. He says, Napoleon said he's going to reward me. This is what he does. Now he wants to kill me just because I want to have a normal conversation with him about what it was like. So they put him up on the galley, they're ready to go, and Napoleon says, I want to be the one to murder him. I want to be the one to kick the stool from underneath him because I'm so angry at what he did. And the man is looking at him, and he almost lost his life already just from the fear, from the anxiety. He can't believe it. Finally, the last moment, Napoleon goes over to him. He says, you know what, forget it. We'll keep you alive. You can go. We'll have a conversation. Don't worry about it. So the man turns to him. He says, what did you do that for? He says, that's what it felt like when I was under that mattress. I just gave you the real answer to my question. So the man turns to me and says, why couldn't you just explain it to me? Why do you have to go through all this drama? He says, because there's no way to explain that feeling. The only way to explain the feeling is for you to actually live through it like I lived through it. And that's the real answer to your question. I was just trying to make you feel what it is that I felt. If you want to really understand what it felt like when I was under that mattress and they almost found me, that's what it felt like. When you were almost killed right there and I was the one who almost murdered you, that's what it feels like. And that says, some of the Bali Musar is what it's supposed to be like. You can't explain to someone what does it mean to feel a mesikus, an arevus, a love, an enjoyment for Torah, for mitzvahs, If you don't jump in and try to have the experience on your own, you'll never feel it. We can't explain it to someone. If you unfortunately don't have the opportunity to enjoy the mitzvah, you just got to get in there. You have to have the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam to feel how exciting it is. Bekovei Hashem Yachalifu Korach, to feel how much energy, how much vigor, how much vitality the person will be able to feel if they really throw themselves into the mitzvah and get so involved that it just takes over everything about them, and it's something that is supposed to be the most enjoyable of experiences of our lives. And this is what the Aruch Haim HaKadosh writes in Parshas Balak, when Bilam says, V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. What does it mean? He didn't see any amal b'Yisrael. What does it mean? Says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, and I quote, Gam niskavein lomar. What Bilam meant to say here was, Sha'atzadikim. Hagam shows the mitzvahs. Yes, you watch righteous people and they're so involved in mitzvahs and in chesed and every moment of their lives, they're so busy with all of this. V'chalasakam b'torah, and they're going to bedikas chametz, under the mattress, into the mattress, and they're going all over the place, and it's not so easy. All the Pesach preparation, still, says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, after all that, einim margishim sheyesh lahem amal. They don't feel that this is a burden. They don't feel that this is cumbersome. Kilo suchal se'ez. We don't have that kind of perspective. We don't have that feeling. Lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. I look at the Jewish people. I watch them do mitzvahs, and I'm aghast, says Bilam. How could it be that they don't get worn out, that they don't see this as a burden? Ela adarabba, when they do a mitzvah, when they're totally in it, they feel ka'adam hamraviach, they feel like a person who's just collecting diamonds, who's just enjoying life, who ka'adam hamishtasheya bishashuim lerov, like you give somebody to go into a candy store and take whatever they want, lerov cheshkam b'Torah, because they so much want, they so much have an interest in that which the Torah expects of them in having the relationship with God Himself. Let's just close. The Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer Shem Olam, and I think it's a powerful point. He says, Hagida na acha. He says, I beg of you, my dear brothers, v'hisbonim b'nafshecha. Just think to yourself for a moment. Haim ala davar ze b'rayoncha. Did you ever have a moment where you thought about the following? Pam achas b'shavua. Maybe once a week, says the Chafetz Chaim. Or if that's too difficult, pam achas b'chodesh. Maybe once a month. Or if that's too difficult, once a week, once a month, at least, al kalpanim pam achas b'shana. Did you ever think, once a month, once a week, or at least once a year, lios belibcha sameach v'tov leiv mikiyum hamitzvos. Says the Chafetz Chaim, have you ever thought for one moment in the year that the mitzvah that I'm doing is so enjoyable, that the mitzvah that I'm doing gives me so much pleasure, and there's nothing else I'd rather be doing than this? Do we at least give ourselves the opportunity, says the Chafetz Chaim, one time a year, to think about it? Pesach gives us the opportunity to be involved in so many mitzvahs. I think the Vilna Gaon said there's something like 60 or 70 mitzvahs on the Leil HaSeder. So much to be involved in, so much to be excited about, but yet we allow the stress to take us over, and that's not the perspective of what Pesach is supposed to be. Like we say in our Haftorah this week, V'lo Ra, I'm sorry, that's in Parshas Bilam, V'lo Ra Amal B'Yisrael. But the Haftorah of our Parsha, as we mentioned before from the Pasuk in Yeshayah HaNavi, is Ki agata b'Yisrael, if it's so difficult for us, if it brings so much stress, so much agony, if it brings us so much anxiety, it means la'osi karasa Yaakov, there's something about our perspective that's wrong, and that's not what the mitzvahs are supposed to do for us. So as we embark on this journey of coming to the Yom Tov of Pesach, we have the opportunity to appreciate all that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us, the great experience of having over the celebration of Pesach, over the Yom Tov of Pesach, with our families, with all those who we love to celebrate Yom Tov with. And we have the opportunity to think about what the Chafetz Chaim told us. At least once a year, have the experience, have the chance to just savor the moment and enjoy what it is that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us the opportunity to enjoy.